the matter with me? Is he better? You mean I can hear it? Yes, old man can hear. All of it is symptomatic. A medical friend of mine said recently, looking at me, "You look so horrible, you look so really awful. You know, all the things you've been talking about for so long, I think you'd better do a very short synopsis containing an outline of the whole thing from A to Z before it's too late." So I said, "Well, how will I do that?" He said, "Oh, it's the usual way, you know, just start from the beginning, your right arm until you come to the end, and then if you can, stop." So that's what I'm going to do. I said, "What would you call it?" And he said, "What would you call it?" And I said, "Well, what would anybody call it? An intelligent anybody?" And he said, "Probably from sensum to divine consciousness." So that is the title. I'm totally responsible for the whole thing. Now, to begin with, as my friend teacher said, "Why do you start the wrong way up?" I put it that way so that I can go like this. Give me this. Now, anything that we know is the product of a stimulus. You probably all think you know that already. But the word stimulus is very interesting. So we're going to spend about 2 hours analysing that and then dash through the rest. As you know, the S means spirit and the T means fixation by crucifixion, cross forces, fixate. So ST means self, where self equals spirit, sentient power, crossing itself and providing itself with its own stimulus. The I means individuation. When one line of force hits another at the intersection point, there is stimulation of one by the other. It is always both ways. You can't stimulate an object without the object stimulating you in return. In India, that's called karma. Action, reaction. STI. Self crucifying individual. The M means substance, the U means drive, the L means binding. The U means drive after the bind. The S means issuance. Mula means a root. Mula means root. A root issuance. Now the real source of all things whatever is sentient power. Power that feels itself. Science tries to dismiss awareness, consciousness, in order to gain what it believes will be purely objective information. But that's utterly impossible. That would imply a dualism of an absolutely unconscious object and a conscious subject, the subject knowing the object being known by the subject, but the two being absolutely diverse. And that cannot be true because they interact. Stimulus, therefore, means a behavior of a root power self-substantialized by crossing itself, it initiates changes within itself by this very self-crossing. That is the meaning of stimulus. Ordinarily, you tend to think of stimulus as application of a force to an object, possibly a living object, like a cell, an amoeba, or a complicated animal structure. So having got the idea of the stimulus situation is really infinite. The stimulus situation is the infinite, the extended sentient power. The Hindus for that is Brahman. Brahman means the extended being. Infinite extension of sentient power, meaning itself by enclosing itself and differentiating itself within itself enclosure. So the stimulus, which external biological science would think would be external to the cell, is really the container of the whole situation, including the object which is being stimulated. So the stimulus comes and gives rise to a centrum. And we'll examine the word centrum. I'm not taking the 2 hours on the stimulus after all. I changed my mind about that. Centrum means the spirit is triple and moving and issuing from within itself and driving itself to substantiality. Centrum. ENS, if you Latin scholars know, N, implies being itself. If you know the letter, you need a fifth letter, signifies infinite life. And it was drawn anciently, and is even found in ancient Hebrew manuscripts in the same form we still use today in English, a vertical with 3 bars coming off it. One for form, one feeling, one drive or phonation. Thinking, feeling, and willing. And implied by the letter E, 3 strokes on the vertical. Centrum therefore means sentient power in its triplicity, remember triple S, force, form, function, always simultaneously co-presented, driving itself into a state of substantiality. Now to substantialize, all you have to do is focus inwardly on your own being. The active internal self-focus causes substantialization. In the same way, in the body of protoplasm of a human being, it is internalization of the sentient power of the fertilized ovum that deposits within that fertilized ovum a series of changes of cells of division and production of a food canal and the nervous cord, the spinal cord, and so on. All these are produced by internalization of sentient power. So the M at the end of centrum, which means substantiality, that M implies an inner focusing of sentience itself upon itself. Sentience, when it does not focus on itself, is not called substantial. Because substantial means understanding. To understand the infinite must make a sphere by pressing in and pressing into that sphere very hard, and then the sphere becomes a substance. In the same way that the internalization of the determination to stand up and have legs and so on in the body actually deposits bones in the protoplasm. Every organ in the body is deposited in the body by an active interiorization of sentient power. So the centrum is the immediate product of the stimulus. Remember, the stimulus situation is infinite, and a centrum is anywhere, whatever, within the infinite, so there is a substantialization of the stimulus presented to it by itself. Is that enough about that? Can I go on? Well, actually, Peter here is anticipating a very ancient Indian solution of the problem using the word limit. Now, Faust is focused internally. There is no limit whatever. The thing is infinitely extended, and it's called Brahman. It's a sentient power not yet intended. It is extended naturally from its own being throughout infinity, and only when it intends to focus does it start this process of self-limitation, which is substantialization. When you look at the word limit, it tells you, reverse it, stimulus, doesn't it? The generation of this point is the beginning of time, which runs backwards from the point of punctual precipitation. This is called the inner limit, when you conceive of pressing onto a center, because you must come to a definite point where you can't press further in. If you press any harder, you'll come out again. Imagine a force contracting, like the hand becomes a fist, and then contract the fist very hard, harder, 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 it gets tighter and tighter. Now, supposing I had the ability to do this, the fist would get smaller and smaller. Actually, my left hand gives you a good example, because if I put those two bones together, you see the left one is about 3/4 inch shorter than the right. Now, it didn't used to be like that. But the deliberate contraction of certain modes of unacceptable intellection have contracted that side down so it's very small. As a matter of fact, it might finish up about the size of a baby's hand, that one. But before I depart, I'm interestedly watching how far it can contract. But imagine if I contracted it down, it gets smaller and smaller, but still retains the form of the hand. Yes? If I go on contracting, 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 smaller and smaller, and I'm retaining hand form, I come to a point, if I put further power into it, instead of going smaller, it will suddenly burst out with a constraint. Is that clearly understood? And when it's at that limit, it is called Yod. And Yod is the primary point in Hebrew, and means, funnily enough, in the lexicon, a hand. It's gained by actually doing this exercise. And imagine if I contract my hand deliberately, very strongly, over years, it will get smaller and smaller and smaller. Indian fakirs have done this, in fact. Just to see if you can do it, and you can do it. You can wither away any organ in your body by this process of self-contraction. You can reduce it and retain its form, but reduce it to the inner limit. Now, the opposite of the inner limit, logically, is the exterior limit, which is the infinite extension called Brahman. So we now have this situation where the stimulus situation, which is infinite, is stimulating itself within itself, and every part of it, because it is a continuum, is receiving the intention of every other part to be the recipient substance of an input of concentrated energy of consciousness. And therefore, there is a centrum for every point of the total stimulus situation. Is that clear, speaker? Said yes. You can all find it clear to us, therefore. Because when Peter is clear, we are all clear. In fact, in the next war, I'm going to employ him to sound the all clear. Now, when there is a centrum, the funny thing about it is, it is not yet rationalized. What do we mean by rationalization? We mean the application of pi ratio to it. Pi is a very weird number, loosely 3 7, 3.1416, but it goes on actually to infinity. We call an arbitrary limit to that when we get tired of writing it out. But in fact, every formal existential being in total reality is dependent for its form upon that ratio called pi. You know how you do a pi? You just do two verses and put a cup on it. That's the sign of pi. It's like a lintel structure. Two stones, the stone ends of a cross piece. Looks like pi. Pi means simply the actual ratio of all conceivable forms which are built out of a primary rotation of energy. The circle and the radius. In Hindu philosophy, they are symbolized as Krishna, the circumference, and Radha, the radius. They are man and wife. You know, when you use the word husband, you mean houseband. And the circumference represents the man holding the house. And the radius is the woman trying to get out. You know, nobody ever takes me anywhere. I have nothing to wear. The last fur coat I had, which is raccoon, fell to pieces. Raccoon means rogue's egg. So we have to do something about the sensing, because it hasn't got any form. What it does have is a feeling quality to a degree of pleasure or unpleasure. Intense pleasure, rapture, ecstasy, ecstasy, or intense pain. Total impedance. It is interesting that in the Viking runes, which are magical symbols, the one that looks like a vertical stick, exactly like an eye, means impedance. And it means that the individuated consciousness is the only impedance to the will of the absolute. If there are any Satanists in the hall at the moment, they will be delighted to that one. There was a vicar on the TV the other night talking about the Satanism of a certain man who'd been pulling Peter's legs, including the vicar's legs, by saying that he was under the power of Satan and needed a few £100,000 to get out of it. And he was such a sincerely suffering man, the vicar felt sorry for him and helped him to get the money, which he said was to purchase satanic instruments from Satanists in order to destroy them. So he got several £100,000 for this, and it was found that he'd been using it for womanizing, drinking, and holiday making. So the court, duly, I don't know by what rational, pi-rational process, decided he was worth a £50,000 fine, although he'd had several £100,000, and he had not declared the location of the rest of it. Anyhow, at the moment, he's supposed to be languishing, still in dreadful danger from Satan in the cell. And of course, he was a joker. And he believed, and there was another vicar who was very nice about it, and I was then an expert on the whole question of Satanism and devilry. And he said that Satanists are men who believe in God, but they believe that God's real son was Satan, and Jesus is not the real son. And they therefore worship the real son, not the bad son. Jesus is the bad son, they said, and Satan is a good son. And the bad son, Jesus, has been going around blackening the character of Satan. And with the aid of a few £100,000, the world was rescued from the danger of Satan taking over from Jesus. And naturally, a lot of people are terribly interested in Satanism because they're quite sure it has to do with sexual frolic in churchyards in the middle of a summer night. And it's practically irresistible on TV in Lon Chaney Jr. type movies. The sentiment, therefore, is a feeling with a degree of affective charge. Affective charge is liking and disliking to some degree, but no adequate definition. So we need something else if we wish to control the sentence. Do you like, I ask you all, do you like a vague feeling of disquiet with no definition of the cause? No, not nice. Everybody looks at them and says, have you had a baby this flat? I saw my baby sitting at this flat the other day, and suddenly he rushed out of the room and disappeared. And he reappeared some moments later from the loo. Very clearly despairing. It's such a warning from feeling something is about to happen. But the feeling, he managed to define it sufficiently. So the sensum had started to come into the level of the percept. The percept receptive from capere to capture. A sensum, in order to become a percept, must be seized by reason. Per, par ratio, per set, rational capture. You get your vague feeling and you say, what is my vague feeling? I'll just have a look. There it is. There is a plain handkerchief, you see. If I look at it and say, what is it? A bit blank. If I turn it over, there's three legs of man, which to me symbolize the triple S. Force, form, function. Now the moment we look at that symbol on there, we automatically tend to focus, don't we? And we say to ourselves, now I'm beginning to get control. The sensum begins to be controlled when we rationalize it and declare it's got a cause. To do that, we have to find a form acting on another form. Like posterior descends onto drawing pin, and if you focus sharply, you get a percept. And usually, if you've had it once, you know it again. As in the old days, when monks used to wear hair shirts, in order to make themselves conscious, if you know, a good hair shirt tends to induce consciousness. If they wore them too long, they could not distinguish between hair shirt and flea bite. And some of them got pretty lousy while they were being illuminated. Now, if you get a question, is it my hair shirt or my hirsute, like Billy Connolly said the other night, is it a matter of my hair shirt or my hair or my body hair or an inhabitant? Because, you know, when you start itching, it's an ego state. The more you scratch, the more you itch. You come to a point where you cannot sort out your life from your license. It is very important to know the person saves you from the vague threat and vague hope of the sensing. So the people who pursue control deliberately increase perception, and every percept is a capturing, a grasping at a sensum in order to fix it and define its causal relation with the other sensa or other percept. So a percept is quite a high attainment. It allows the dog to distinguish another dog. For a lady dog to know a gentleman dog. It categorizes them. So even at the level of the animals, the percept is already formed. And the earliest percepts are those whereby plants recognize each other and their various parts in the process of fertilization and cross-fertilization of plants. There is recognition of form. That means the plant can perceive, can capture to a degree. And an animal can do it even more so, and a rational human being can do it even more than the animal. And when you have a percept, if you had only one percept, it would be useful for controlling a sentient situation. But it might not cover a host of sensa. It might be too narrow. So you want to make a lot of percepts And then grouping the percepts together, you put them in the form concept. Concept means capturing a group of percepts. I said capturing a group of percepts together, finding out what is similar about them, and holding that similarity as a group sign under which you can subsume, total up, the percept. So if I say the people in this room are featherless bipeds, an Aristotelian definition of a human being, I subsume many men and women under the concept human being. Concept means take a group of percepts, arrange them for similarities, and then give them a title to cover the similarities of all of them. You can then say we are conceptualized as animal compared with vegetable and mineral. We are also conceptualized as rational animal, and that makes us into man. When we get the concept group, we increase our power of choice. If we had only one percept, we'd have no choice. We'd just be dominated by the percept. And if we have more than one percept, we have a choice between them. And the greater the number of percepts we have, and the greater the number of control concepts we have over the percept, the greater our freedom of choice. And therefore, when we come to choose, we enter into the next phase, volition. Volition means willing. The will initiates a choosing. The choosing is that whereby you reject something and take something else. It's always implies shop. In English, the letter CH, as in church, and choose. They come from a primary phonetic meaning to chop, to sever. With a force, shaped like an axe, like a wedge. Now imagine that volition increases its power the greater the number of concepts it has to control. The greater the number of percepts, the greater the number of sensa. The greater the number of sensual situations you can choose from. So therefore we have volition. Volition, the V-O-L in it, change V into B, volition. And the name, the bull, B-U-L-L, have exactly the same meaning in the original form. The bull, the ball, the ball, all have the same meaning. To develop, by choice, to drive, to push, to choose. Now when you get to the level of volition, volition is choice. It is not mechanically determined. It is free selection and energizing from a mass of concepts, percepts and sensa from the total stimulus situation. Volition is therefore a very, very high concept. In fact, 95% of the so-called race of man don't know anything about volition. What they know is something else. The word will to them is actually nothing but a synonym for wishing, wanting, and desiring. Now, wanting means lacking, wishing means dissipating, and desiring means from an intent of fatherhood. And those are not volition, because volition is free choice. And wishing and wanting and desiring arise from a stimulus hitting the being, and therefore producing the sensum, which is then grasped and becomes a percept, roots with concept, and because the percept is formulated, it is just like a machine. Every idea that is correctly defined is like a cog wheel sitting into another cocktail or a group of stuff, and therefore is entirely mechanical. So the level of ideas clearly defined, if we were identified, we would actually react like machines. We have nothing except mechanical formal responses to formal stimuli. So the process of what we call an animal reason, which is reactive formula process, when the stimulus hits us, the stimulus becomes a percept, the percepts react with other percepts, and there is an immediate reaction which is not a free volition. To become a free volition, we have to lift the percept up to the level of the concept, and then free ourselves from the concept in order to choose from the concept that percept and that sentence and that stimulus which you will focus upon. So, where does the volition come from? It comes from conscious self. Now let's be careful about this. You place the first five on the digits on the hand, and the sixth one, the consciousness, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number six is the number of the integrated being. Six means integration. It's the natural division of the circle by pi ratio. So where you believe you are an individuated conscious self, you are on sixth level, and you are above volition, but can release volition from consciousness. And then we say at that level, consciousness is a catalyst. When you're fully conscious of conscious self, you are reflective and you are free. Free from the memory of prior volition, free from concept, free from percept, free from sensor, free from stimuli. You are conscious of them all, and you know as a fact, not a theory, that the total stimulus situation is your conscious self. So this stimulus down here and this conscious self here are the two limits of individuated awareness. One is stimulus and the other one is recipient, conscious self, who initiated the stimulus in the first place. And that's a very high level of being. Conscious self, reflective. Now above that is the seventh, the divine self. Because when you look at your palm, out of which the five processes come, you know that your fingers originally evolved from the palm, I think it's budding out. But they're in space. So space is the seventh one. Space is a non-identified sentient power looking at itself, not as a stimulus totality, not as sensum, not percept, not concept, not volition, not even individuated reflective self, but pure consciousness as such, without limitation. Now one looking into itself realizes itself to be the original absolute from which all the others derive. Now, often we say things like that and say, yes, I know that, I've learned that, I can do that. Sometimes the fellow said to me last week, I realized that, but he didn't realize it. What he did do was intellectually see the possibility of it being a rational truth. To realize means to are it. R means to discriminate all the parts. L means to hold all the parts together in your own being. Now your own being is a triplicity of force, form, function. The force of you is power that constitutes you. The form that force has assumed, and the function or activity of that form under the impulse of that force. when you can say you not only intellectually know it, but you also feel and love that you know it, that's very important. You must love what you know. Then you can volitionally substantialize it, and only then is it real. Real means the ruling power of self-law. Come back down. Well, what does down mean? What you actually do, of course, is remember that the original stimulus situation was the totality of all possible situations prior to analysis. The total stimulus situation of infinity is the original meaning of stimulus. So when you focus on a single symptom and make it perfect, you tend to forget that the stimulus is infinite and infinitely varied. But when you reach the level of the absolute divine self, you remember all through that you are an absolute divining self, that's one that sees through everything. You are divine, and all the other things are the branches. And consciousness and volition and conception and perception and symptoms and stimulus are all nothing but the very same absolute acting on and in itself. Now that is the goal of mind. So the starting of the stimulus situation, and symptoms are first awareness that there is one. We shall invite you from that logically, step by step, until we come to the absolute divine self, which in Indian philosophy is Brahman. And you then say, Aham Brahman. And I, the observing being, am this infinitely extended being, focused down to my empirical level for certain temporal material practical processes. If you do not separate the pragmatic material thing from the spiritual eternal thing. Now, when we look at it, let's look at three letters. There are the letters Aleph, Mem, and Shin. In Kabbalah, they are called three mother letters. Now, you know that the mother means an M, or substance of otherness. Mother is substance of otherness. And there are said to be three mother letters. One is an Aleph, which you write A for. One is Mem, for which you write M. And one is Shin, for which you write S. AMS. AMS means absolute substantial issuance. Now I mentioned that there is a relation there hidden, because the AMS are three modes of self-observation of something which is not a separable trinity, but in fact is one with three aspects. An A aspect, which is air, intellect, an M aspect, which is material, a Shin aspect, which is fire and activation. A for the intellect there, A for air, intellect, M for mer, sea, ocean, something, flexibility, and S for energetic issuance, activation. Now those three letters have to be applied in all beings, whatever, from the greatest macrocosmic to the most minute subatomic particle. Now, to realize to be in control of oneself on three levels, intellectually, that's the A factor, substantially the M factor, and actively, the aspect. If you haven't got those three modes of self-control, you are not real. To the degree that you lack that triple control, you have not yet become a real being. A real being is a kingly being, a controlled being, a being where will, feeling, and mediation are identical. They're definable as if they were three separate substances, but they're not separate at all. They're three aspects which the Absolute Consciousness sets up inside itself to control its force, form, function, but in no way separately. So we then have this fainting air intellect is male. Remember, mother means a substance of otherness. So one of the substances of otherness, symbolized by the air, is intellect, and that is male. And that means form. Intellect is form of this power, the power of ideation. Now the M is the sign of water. Men means water, flexibility, adjustability, receptivity, responsiveness, and woman. Just as the A is a male intellectual, the M is a female, sensitive, receptive. And the S of the AM is the sum of the A and the M. The sum there corresponds with the messianic self-awareness. Now when we look at that simplicity, we can see a peculiar thing. Providing we confine ourselves to the intellectual definition of AMS, we have a very peculiar problem. The A signifies pure intellect, the M, pure sensitivity of feeling, which is not formed like the intellect, but feels the qualitative pleasure pain in the intellectual proposition. Now you know that you can actually do this in yourself. You can actually think of an idea, something, the idea of cat, dog, horse, camel, those shapes. Shape is form, form is idea. You can think of those, and then you have a peculiar thing. When you feel the quality of it, do I like it? Have you ever been breathed on a close quarters by a camel? Did you like it? Probably not. Well, everything that is formed has a quality of feeling, but the feeling can never be the idea or form that corresponds with its exactness. That's the feeling. It means nor can there ever change take into man, or man into woman, or woman into man. This is the cause of the failures of marriage, that the intellectual male doesn't know what it's like to feel like the woman, symbolized by the water, the sensitivity, the awareness of the warning of danger, the promise of pleasure to come, is felt. But the intellect cannot feel that feeling, and yet the intellect and the feeling are both inherent in the same being, and they're not separable. They're not separable from each other in the sense of it being possible to sunder them, tear them apart, and throw one away, or both separately. And yet they are living together in one body. Now in a man there is intellect, and if you insult him, you can make him feel unpleasure. That's the feminine side of his being, the feeling. In a woman, this feeling, if you explain an idea to her very, very carefully, providing she likes the idea, she can accept it. Which doesn't mean she'll remember it in a minute. Because she likes being informed. And one of the ways of being worthy of information is not to know anything. So as fast as you become, as a woman, informed by a man, you dismiss it and say, tell me again. Now, the male mind, as such, divorced from the feelings, female side of his being, doesn't know this peculiarity, that the feeling loves the function of being informed more than the form received in the function. That's very peculiar. And this is a discovery directly from some. And the woman likes the relationship of being informed, but doesn't care at all about the form once the communication process is completed. That's a little girl that you tell a sad story to, and when you finish, you just tell me again. And if you do, and you tell it slightly differently, she said, "You've done it wrong." I mean, you know, telling stories to me. They're marvelous. They remember the whole story exactly, girl. And you get one word wrong, and they tell you all. And they've not been listening. They've been feeling the delight of being communicated with, and being in a relation. Nevertheless, the words of record is in case you do it wrong. Now, this is a very marvelous simplicity, isn't it? And until you've got control over that, they're not real. Now, let's define real and unreal. Real means the infinite, absolute, unchangeable, infinitely various, totally integrated form, force, function of the universe, and as complete in itself, it cannot change. So real means utterly changeless. That's the way Plato would use it. The real is the changeless. The real is that which abides in all eternity without ever changing. Only that is real. Whereas a thing, a material thing in time, wears out, changes, and to the degree that it changes, is unreal. Now, as you said, I accept the definition. That which is eternally identical in me, a false form function, I assert, is real, because it does not ever change. But wherever I change my mind about anything, or my feelings about anything, or my will about anything, I was at the moment of that change unreal. Now, how much reality is there in the human race? You certainly say quite a lot. Now, the whole object of evolution from sense into divine self is to become real. And it's to find in you something that's absolutely beyond all possibility of a change. How does that feel? How would you like a relation that never ever changes? There's a tendency to say, "I don't like it." When you actually think you have something quite wrong. When you think about that, you're thinking it's a temporal stimulus situation of pure boredom. And that is not what the changeless is like. The eternal, real changeless is power, form, function, infinitely various within its changelessness. It changes all the forms, all the feelings, all the actions, but it doesn't change its capacity for this triple process. So it's an ever-changing, eternal, changeless being. Doesn't sound a bit of a handful to deal with. Is that what? Total activity, that's right. Peter says total activity. Well, that's the same as the definition of God. God is pure act. Nothing but act. There's no passivity there. Everything about that triple being is pure actuality. Actuality radiation, actuality feeling evaluation, actuality of cognition, of volitional act, actuality, perfect, infinite, eternal, but the exact opposite of the boring, repetitive, similar form of time. How do we feel about it? Very good. How far away from it are we? Now, what's our first step? The steps are seven there. And the first step is to become aware that we are under stimulus. You ever stop in the middle of the day and say, I am being stimulated? Do you do that? Actually stop. You say, I'm under stimulation. I think I'll examine my stimuli. And everyone you pick out is a symptom. And then do you say, I'm now examining the symptom. And I will discover it's nothing but self-examining, self-driving to substance. That's the symptom. When you examine the symptom, you're examining you, sensing you. And then you say, I think I'll make a purchase out of this symptom. How many times an hour do you do this? Peter is trying to reckon up. I saw his eyes going on. One, two, three. Categorizing is when you conceptualize. Category is our concept, under which you subsume percept. Now, how many times a day do you stop in the middle of what you're doing? And say, I will now categorize my present sense of percept condition. And how many times a day, or an hour, or a minute, do you stop and say, gosh, I'm willing to do this? Or are you running along on the memory of previous directives, the origin of which we have forgotten? Which is the truth? How many times a day do we remember consciousness is consciousness, and that consciousness is the absolute root of everything we have ever known, know now, or can know in the future? It will always be a modality of consciousness. How many times a day have you said that? Consciousness. The white rabbit in Alice rushing through saying I'm late. His name is Hire. Isn't he an Anglo-Saxon rabbit? Haven't you got an Anglo-Saxon attitude? He's saying I'm late. You know why? Because he's always behind his perception of the symptom. The symptom is immediate, but the percept is after the immediacy of the symptom. And the concept is later than the percept. So you're very late. And most people never get above this level. Think the stimulus is the mineral world, the sensum is the plant world, the percept is the animal world, the concept is the human world as pure intellect. But it is not volition. Do you ever watch the money program on a Sunday evening? Or a bit of it? Or its correspondent one on ITV? Program about business. And they're all at the conceptual level. And you see, it's a kiosk with six sides to them. Tell you, that's not accidental. That's symbolic. If you don't go above this concept, six facets of reality, and don't go above those, and keep them all focusing down again, willing the concept, analysis, the percept, sense, and stimulus, the stimulus situation is total reality. And it shows itself on the computers in the exchange, where the shares being examined and so on. And shouts going up and down all day long, moment by moment. You have to watch, don't you? Buy, sell. Sell what you just bought, buy. 5 minutes, and you made £5,000 or lost it. 2 minutes, you made £5 million or lost it. And so on. According to your degree of alertness of the total stimulus situation. Are you in the Falklands? Do you know the mineral wealth in the Antarctic and the fish wealth in those oceans? The potential wealth down there, the hidden oil, all kinds of things there. And under the intent to get control of that, you defend the patriotism of a little island. That's very broad thinking, isn't it? Behind all the government is an intelligence that knows all about that. And then a select group of the 5% who are an elect group of the 95% who know nothing about it. The cheerers and flag wavers know nothing. But the silent ones up there, they know. They say we'll go to the moon. But the real intent is not to go to the moon, but to get aerial photography, which will save billions of pounds in geological research on Earth. Charity begins at home. How often do the men say this charming little drudge, who slave away to maintain my comfort? This bearer of my carpet pieces, I should have compassion upon her and give her a gin lemon. How many times is that consciously done? And how many times has the lady not beaten into it the week before by laying the foundation of the awareness of her slavery in him? You know, when Eve was taken out of Adam, she knew this had been a shame. She was very annoyed about it and hadn't forgiven him yet. No, it's because you forgot to focus on her. And when you forget to focus on something, God takes it away. To see it, you'll miss it. Remember, God is not a myth. He's not an abstract idea. He, God, is the total, absolute, stimulus situation. People have been taught to think your relative God is somewhere over there. Then he looks down and feels sorry because the baby fell out of his carriage. Otherwise he gets on with his cosmic business. It isn't like that at all. God is the total sentient power stimulus situation in its absolute concreteness and presence here and now in everyone. Can we believe it? Well, not if we don't will to. You know, the belief is an act of will. Some people are not sure about God, but really what they're not sure about is their own will to allow a bit of room for God in their universe. Try and look at those words on there. Hold them in your mind simultaneously. Rush up and down a few times. Try and hold on to them all at once and tell me what kind of state you're in.
Chaos.
I don't find that at all. I find an absolute stillness. On the letters. You're seeking and not on the meaning. Focus on the meaning of all of it simultaneously, and that is absolute concrete divine consciousness. Now how do you feel if you do that? Be still in your omniscience. From the everlasting arms. Keeping your act together. Well, getting your act together. And the act is triple, fourth form function. You are actually at that moment in divine being. In the Bible, it says that you are called a God of the God. Getting your act together. Your thought, feeling, and will. With no self-deception, total, sincere self-knowledge. It's pure bliss if you do it, you know. Because you are absolutely free to choose anything whatever in that condition, with no predetermination. It's that condition in which the still, small voice operates. If you arrange those in a circle so that the stimulus and the absolute there meet, put it on a piece of card and look at it and keep going round it both ways and across it, you will find at a certain critical point you'll actually suddenly become still. And in that stillness you are a divine being. And you have attained the goal of evolution. That's called the divinization of the human self.